Hello there and welcome. Today is Tuesday, September the 20th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, millions worldwide watched Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump face off.
But this is a man who has called women pigs, slobs, and dogs.
We have live analysis of the debate and what the reaction has been on social media. Also ahead, we've got new movie reviews from our Vegas film critic. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, it was a wild debate, with the first presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, with a lot more tension than we would have expected. And we have our own national correspondent Jim Malone here live in studio with reaction. And we've got our social media reporter Andrew Palcheski coming to us live from the debate venue. Let's start with you, Jim. We've got some sound of what transpired in the debate, including, let's take a listen to one of the many exchanges, shall we say, between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And this one had to do with the issue of Donald Trump's tax returns.
First, maybe he's not as rich as he says he is. Second, maybe he's not as charitable as he claims to be. Third, we don't know all of his business dealings, but we have been told through investigative reporting that he owes about $650 million to Wall Street and foreign banks. Or maybe he doesn't want the American people, all of you watching tonight, to know that he's paid nothing in federal taxes, because the only years that anybody's ever seen were a couple of years when he had to turn them over to state authorities when he was trying to get a casino license, and they showed he didn't pay any federal income tax. So
that makes
if
me
he's
smart.
Paid zero, that means zero for troops, zero for vets, zero for schools or health.
I will release my tax returns against my lawyer's wishes when she releases her 33,000 emails that have been deleted. As soon as she releases them, I will release my tax returns. And that's against my lawyers. They say, don't do it. I will tell you this. No, in fact, watching shows, reading the papers, almost every lawyer says, you don't release your returns until the audit's complete. When the audit's complete, I'll do it. But I would go against them if she releases her
email. So it's negotiable?
It's not negotiable. No, let her release the email. Why did she delete 33,000?
All right. Jim Malone, VOA national correspondent here in studio. What was your reaction to that exchange?
Well, it was typical of what went on throughout much of the debate. It was, I think, contentious, combative. Trump was often interrupting sometimes Clinton's answers, sometimes the moderator. Clinton was more restrained, I think, sort of projecting a cooler demeanor. Trump was pretty hot. And when I say that, I mean he was going after her and questioning her on any number of things. But a lot of the questions kind of put him on the defensive. The tax return issue, the issue of the birther controversy that he's been fanning for the last several years, and also some of the other statements he's made during the campaign about women, about minorities, in terms of race and law and order and things like that. So there was also virtually very little discussion about immigration, which is his number one issue. And I think that, you know, he did try to work it in a few times, but it played, I think much of it played in some ways to Clinton's strengths and not to Trump's.
And you did mention the birther issue that it came up. And let's take a listen to how that went down.
He has really started his political activity based on this racist lie that our first black president was not an American citizen. There was absolutely no evidence for it, but he persisted. He persisted year after year because some of his supporters, people that he was trying to bring into his fold, apparently believed it or wanted to believe it. But remember, Donald started his career back in 1973 being sued by the Justice Department for racial discrimination because he would not rent apartments in one of his developments to African Americans, and he made sure that the people who worked for him understood that was the policy.
Mr. Trump, you can respond, then we're going to move on to the next segment.
I would love to respond. First of all, I got to watch in preparing for this some of your debates against Barack Obama. You treated him with terrible disrespect. And I watched the way you talk now about how lovely everything is and how wonderful you are. It doesn't work that way. You were after him. You were trying to. You even sent out, or your campaign sent out, pictures of him in a certain garb. Very famous pictures. I don't think you can deny that.
All right. Well, we again, as you mentioned, the birther issue came up, the issue of Donald Trump's taxes. He seemed like he was on the defense a lot of the time. Overall, what do you take away from this first debate overall on the bigger picture here?
I think Clinton projected a cooler demeanor that may help her with voters who are looking to assess the next president based on their abilities to be a stable person with the right kind of temperament. They have made Trump's temperament a key issue in the campaign. I think we're going to see more of this now in the wake of this debate. He was agitated at times. It was a very hot debate from his point of view. He did try to score some points on her use of a private email server, on her experience, her length in Washington, which he says is bad experience. So he was critical of her as the political outsider he is. But I think there are some issues here now that he's going to have to deal with in the wake of this debate.
Is one more quick question. Is she just, in some ways, just far more knowledgeable about the issues? Is that why she seemed to have had the upper hand?
Well, let's see what the voters think about that. She certainly has a lot more experience in policy. She's more detailed in many cases in her policy positions. And what I heard a lot from Donald Trump tonight were the same lines you hear in his stump speeches. And I've been hearing them all year since the beginning of January. So in that sense, he didn't advance the ball that much, except maybe in the area of tax reform. But all in all, I think the Clinton campaign is probably going to be pretty happy with this night.
All right. Well, we appreciate your perspective as always. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone, thank you so much. Well, let's turn now to the online chatter and following the debate with VOA's Andrew Palcheski. He is live at Hofstra University, where it all took place. Andrew, what are you hearing?
Well, I've gone to a bit of a quieter place from where I was when we spoke previously in the spin room, but the chatter hasn't stopped on social media. People still talking about some of those key moments from the debate that Jim mentioned, some of the top issues. Not a lot of policy issues. A lot of, as Jim said, some of these stump speech one-liners that we see that are sometimes tailor-made for social media. It seems like they almost write them in 140 characters specifically so they can be tweeted out. But we see a lot of that contention that we saw on the debate stage back and forth on social media as well among the supporters. You know, we talked about in the spin room all the different surrogates that are there, congressmen and senators and media figures that are weighing in behalf of the candidates. Well, social media allows millions of surrogates around the country and even around the world to weigh in on behalf of these two candidates as well.
And are you seeing a lot of reaction online on social media one way or another as far as how people viewed the debate and the candidates?
Well, the one thing that I see consistently is really against both of them. A lot of people were tweeting out and saying, really, these two are the best two that we could come up with in this debate. These are the best two candidates. People seeing this back and forth and saying this isn't the leadership we want to see from our next president of the United States. So to a degree, I think just seeing kind of this element of the political process is turning some people off, saying it's the contention that was exhibited in that debate really wasn't what they want to see from their next leader.
Any new hashtags emerging?
Well, there was, there's always something that comes up out of these debates, some minute thing that becomes a kind of viral trend or something. And it was actually Donald Trump's sniffles. Apparently he had a cold of some sort and kept sniffling. So a lot of people commenting on that, actually counting how many times he was sniffling. And a lot of people saying, well, he went after Hillary Clinton on her health and now he's up there and he seems to be sick. So, that we'll see if that ends up being a long-lived trend. I doubt it will. As we often see in these elections, these things pop up and quickly fade away.
All right. We appreciate it. VOA's Andrew Palcheski joining us live from Hofstra University in New York. You can follow him at A Pal. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Here are some of the other stories we are following at voanews.com. Lindsay Lohan visits a hospital for Syrian refugees in Turkey. Iran releases Canadian-Iranian professor detained on security charges. The America's longest war ends with peace accord signing in Cartagena. And Russia and Syria's Assad are using more destructive weaponry in a bid to subdue Aleppo. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues now. Dozens of Russian and Syrian airstrikes on the rebel-held eastern sector of Aleppo has created what UN Syrian envoy Staffan de Mistura has called a chilling, appalling, and tragic situation. He spoke after an emergency UN Security Council meeting Sunday and said that the U.S.-Russia cessation of hostilities announced on September 9th risks, in his words, becoming devoid of credibility.
The past week has been one of the worst ones in Syria during the near 6 years of this devastating conflict.
He appealed for an end to the violence, to protect civilians, and periodic pauses to allow humanitarian aid and medical evacuations to come in. While analysts Abdul Qadir Sino of Indiana University tells VOA's Victor Beatty, the forces of President Bashar al-Assad facing defeat just a year ago, since they now have the momentum to capture all of the vital city.
They use those ceasefires to their advantage by trying to surprise the resistance forces, the opposition, and take advantage of a fatigued population. So the Secretary Kerry is really being taken advantage of in those negotiations.
Capturing the rebel half of the largest city in Syria, where more than 250,000 civilians are trapped, would that be a big victory for Assad's forces?
It would be a tremendous victory for him. He already controls most of Damascus, and Aleppo is actually the largest city in Syria. If he can control it, he can really claim legitimacy and victory on a large scale.
Well, the rhetoric at the UN got rather heated. Samantha Power, the U.S. UN ambassador, said what Russia is sponsoring and doing is not counterterrorism, it's barbarism.
And she's absolutely correct. Now, also, however, one has to keep in context the fact that the Russians have their own grievances, and they're using Syria to really get even with the United States, and especially against sanctions that the United States has imposed on them in the past. So for them, it's an opportunity to get even and to have to show that they have a presence on the world scene and that they are forced to be considered seriously.
The Russian ambassador, Mr. Churkin, Vitaly Churkin, insisted that the U.S. is at fault because it's unable to separate al-Qaeda and Islamic State from other rebel groups. Is that a feasible argument?
No, because no one can do so. How can you separate those groups from others alongside which they fight? Listen, the resistance in Syria, opposition in Syria, has very limited options. And they're formed of different groups of people for reasons that have nothing to do with Russia or the United States. And it makes no sense to a more moderate opposition group to separate themselves from al-Qaeda or other organizations along which they fight. They are at a disadvantage vis-a-vis the regime. If they start fighting each other, they're going to lose immediately or very fast to the regime and Russia. It's unrealistic to ask them to start fighting each other just to satisfy the needs of foreign powers. And certainly not in the capacity of the United States to do so, because they can't possibly convince them to do so, because they're intertwined geographically and otherwise. In fact, they share the same fronts, so they cooperate really well, at least the previous al-Qaeda organization, Nusra Front, which changed its name right now, and other opposition groups. ISIS is more separate in most areas and can be isolated, and here the Russians have no argument.
The UN Syria mediator, Staffan de Mistura, appealed to the Security Council to come up with a way to enforce a ceasefire. He said he's still convinced we can turn the course of events. Is he overly optimistic?
Extremely so. because he's not taking into consideration the incentives of the Russians and the Syrians and the lack of readiness of the American administration, Obama administration, to actually to intervene more forcefully with the Russians and the Syrians.
We've tried two cessation hostilities, as they call them. Both have apparently failed. What's next?
More conflict. And the Russians and the Syrian regime are only going to stop if they win. And the resistance, the opposition is desperate, and they do their best, and they will find no reason whatsoever to sacrifice any of their comrades just to satisfy foreign powers who do little for them.
If Aleppo falls to the Russian and Syrian coalition, what happens next? Will the fighting start to ease back?
Well, it may actually start a domino effect in favor of the Syrian regime. And for the United States, it's a disaster because it will show that it was not able to manage the conflict in a way that's suitable to it and that it was outdone and outplayed by the Russians, which has repercussions all over the world.
And this would be a setback for the Obama administration foreign policy?
Absolutely.
All right, that's analyst Abdelkader Sino of Indiana University. Days after police officially fatally shot a man in Charlotte, North Carolina, the community there continues demonstrating and calling for justice. The family of the deceased man released cell phone video of the moment surrounding his death, and while some expected the city to erupt, protests have remained pretty peaceful, and those people out publicly supporting the demonstrators have grown even more diverse. Arash Arabasadi has more.
They came from nearby neighborhoods, surrounding cities, and various states.
This is the demonstration of free people. So you're going to continue to see different people from all nationalities, because this is a free movement. It's about being free.
The protesters are diverse, young, old, black, white, Hispanic, and they are rallying around an inclusive message.
I just care about the community, and I care about everyone's lives. Every life matters, like everyone's saying, and I just wanted to show support for that.
No justice, no peace!
The fatal shooting of Keith Scott brought them all together.
It may look like it's impossible, but when we come together and we keep moving forward, all things will be possible.
Among them, even protesters from Ferguson, Missouri. Just a year ago, Ferguson erupted in Black Lives Matter protests after a fatal shooting by police.
I had to be here just to show my support. We didn't come to lead anything, but to stand with you all.
Out in the crowd, lawyers joined the demonstration.
All I see is peaceful protests. People from different backgrounds and people from different, you know, races are out here supporting this movement. And I think it's important.
Why do those cops die in Houston?
A heated exchange between a protester and Captain Mike Campagna remained peaceful. The protesters want police to release the officer's body cam video of the Scott shooting.
Don't shoot him. He has no weapon.
His widow's own cell phone footage has intensified calls for more disclosure, and authorities say they plan to release it. Her outcry is joined by the voices of many others from all walks of life. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Charlotte, North Carolina.
All right, you're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
I'm Victor Beatty. Since 1942, the Voice of America has been a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news. Today, VOA remains committed to providing an accurate, objective, and comprehensive news product at the top of every hour, every day. We can be heard on your local affiliate or streamed on the web at voanews.com.
This is VOA's International Edition. Time now to take a look at the latest movies to hit U.S. theaters over the weekend. Joining me now, Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard. Jeff, we've got a movie based on a true story, and we've got one of the worst man-made environmental disasters in the U.S.
Well, from director Peter Berg, who gave his Lone Survivor and Battleship, this story honors the men and women who were heroes on this Deepwater Horizon, this oil rig that went up in flames. And it, all-star cast, Mark Wahlberg, Kurt Russell, Kate Hudson, John Malkovich. I have to say, this is when someone says, look, you're on an oil rig that's on fire, you're thinking, wait a minute, this, how could that be exciting? How is this going to keep my interest? Well, it's one of the most entertaining disaster movies in years. And it's kind of a terrible thing to say because, you know, people died on this and it's based on true events. But, you know, it serves up a realistic, non-phony way of looking at the worst oil spill in American history. And it certainly doesn't put BP in a positive light. And, you know, you can't follow 75% what's going on at a time in this movie because they get really technical. But once the disaster happens, I mean, I was on the edge of my seat, right? I really was. And I can't say that about a lot of movies lately. It was totally thrilling. And I think it's going to be a really big hit. It really is. And also, they have, in conjunction with the release of the film, they have a campaign to help the victims of the Louisiana flooding. This is a real exciting disaster film. It's Towering Inferno on an oil rig. That's how I pitch it.
Wow, fascinating. And we've got a movie, it's got an interesting name, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. What in the world?
Well, if you have a movie like that, it's no surprise that director Tim Burton is attached to it. And it's based on the best-selling novel about a young teenager named Jake who discovers that he's got these special abilities, and he finds this magical place known as Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, where these children have special powers. One kid has bees living inside of them, another one that can create fire, another one that pair of twins that if you see their face, you'll turn to stone. So essentially, it sounds like X-Men for children. And the bad guy is Samuel Jackson, who's out to destroy these children, to consume them, you could say, to be immortal. Overall, it's really a mess. This movie tries to be like four or five different things. It doesn't hold your attention. The star of the movie is Asa Butterfield, who we loved as a little boy in Hugo, and even in Ender's Game. He's this tall, gangly, kind of going through growing pains looking kid who just kind of is a mannequin through the whole movie. So the movie has no structure, no direction, and it's kind of like we've seen this before with the X-Men and with every Marvel superhero movie. So the movie's nothing special, and it's almost unwatchable.
Wow, that's quite a non-endorsement.
How's that for a glowing review?
Wow, yeah, that's a glowing review, all right. And then, of course, we've got Jerry Lewis, 90 years old, right? He's got a new movie out.
Absolutely. Jerry Lewis is back. His first starring role in 20 years. The man is 90 years old. He's still going strong. He's performing here in Las Vegas next weekend. Three shows at the South Point. Can you believe this guy? And Max Rose is about, he plays a legendary jazz musician, and he's been married 60 years. He loses his wife. Then he finds out she's been cheating on him for half of it. And so he's on this journey to find out what was this man, who is this man that decided, you know, what, he wanted to know all about it. So the movie deals with depression, with losing a loved one. It deals with family. It's just, it's pretty intense. It's a heavy drama. It's just a real soulful performance by him, and it's just great to see him back on the big screen. I had the honor of seeing the world premiere here the other day in Las Vegas because Jerry does live here. It's a really special film for a certain audience. It's not for everyone, but it's really amazing to see this man on the screen again after 20 years.
All right. Well, that sounds wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us, Jeffrey K. Howard. You can find his full video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com.
If you doubt the speed at which the world is changing, just take a look at the digital media. In the last 20 years, the introduction of mobile and internet technology has spawned breathtaking advances in the sharing of information and commerce. Today, an estimated one quarter of the Earth's population uses the services of the internet. Two-thirds of us now own a mobile phone. But these advances into the digital age have been met with problems. Problems like state censorship, hackers, and identity theft, to name just a few. The Voice of America wants to know how the digital world has transformed your life. Or have they? We'd like you to tell us your story by writing or sending videos to our website, Twitter, or Facebook page. Find out more by visiting us at our webpage at voanews.com and then click on Digital Frontier. Tell your story and share it with the world through VOA's Digital Frontier.
I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Meanwhile, that wraps up this edition of International Edition. Thank you so much for being with us. You can find us anytime at voanews.com. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Charles Hall. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is very concerned over the situation in Ethiopia, particularly the instability in the Oromia and Amhara regions, Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield said in an interview. Speaking in New York on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly meeting, Assistant Secretary Thomas Greenfield called the response by the government to protests an intense and somewhat harsh crackdown.
We have had discussions with the Ethiopian government encouraging that they have dialogue and that they open the possibility for press freedom, civil society's ability to function, and that many of the people who have been put in jail.
In Oromia, anti-government protests began in November 2015, and they have also occurred in the northern Amhara region. Assistant Secretary Thomas Greenfield said the United States believes that the situation in the country could deteriorate and that the Ethiopian government is aware of that possibility as well.
We've met with Prime Minister Haile Mariam here in New York, and we have encouraged him to look at how the government is addressing the situation.
We think, she said, it could get worse if it's not addressed sooner rather than later.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at voanews.com/editorials.
is for? What's